Welcome to Ghost Lights, the podcast for people that love theaters. I'm Joe Guglielmo, and welcome to episode 2, where we'll explore the Curran Theater in San Francisco, California. Explore photos of the spectacular building by going to our webpage at ghost-lights.com. Now let's jump in. On September 11th, 1922, the 1,600-seat Curran Theater opened its doors for the first time with a performance of Mike Angelo by Edward Locke, a play about a young Italian painter who eventually becomes a successful artist in New York. The audience was not only captivated by the performance, but also impressed by the grand design of the theater. Unlike many vaudeville houses of the time that were defined by their gaudiness, the Curran had an elegant, refined appearance. After the 1906 earthquake, 445 Geary Street remained empty for 12 years, until an ambitious 37-year-old Midwesterner decided it was time for San Franciscans to have access to the finest theatrical productions from Europe and New York. He stepped away from the family business to pursue his passion for the arts. Homer Curran was from a wealthy Missouri family that owned a wheel manufacturing company. He traveled west to study music at Stanford University, where he established himself as an accomplished pianist and composed scores for musicals and operas on campus. After graduating, he moved to Atlanta and then San Francisco, where he purchased the Court Theater, whose name was temporarily changed to the Curran Theater. For the next 8 years, Curran gained management experience in the local theater community. In 1920, Curran joined forces with Lee and J.J. Schubert. The Schubert brothers funded the construction of the Curran Theater for a cost of $800,000 and declared San Francisco the premier West Coast destination for theater. Having established a beachhead on the West Coast, the Schuberts were ready to compete with Erlinger's powerful syndicate. Curran, having spent over a decade in the local theater community, provided the Schuberts with an invaluable insight to the taste of San Franciscans and buoyed the Curran's chance for success. This enabled the Curran to book shows straight from Broadway. As the manager, Homer Curran quickly forged a relationship with the Theater Guild, the producers responsible for the Broadway premieres of shows such as Morning Becomes Electra, The Philadelphia Story, and Oklahoma. And on September 3, 1921, the Curran was renamed the Century Theater for a screening of Queen of Sheba starring Betty Blythe, and its name quickly reverted. In 1925, the film version of The Phantom of the Opera, starring the legendary Lon Chaney, was shown at the Curran Theater. In 1938, Louis Lorry, a theatrical investor, entered the scene and partnered with Curran, creating the Curran-Lorry Partnership to produce productions and supplement the shows that were available on the road. In 1939, with Lorry, Homer Curran founded the San Francisco Light Opera Company and teamed up with the Los Angeles Civic Light Opera. This partnership gave both the San Francisco Light Opera Company and the Los Angeles Civic Light Opera Company the ability to offer New York producers homes for their shows in both Los Angeles and San Francisco. The Broadway producers took advantage of this opportunity and began extending their touring productions into California. In 1944, the San Francisco and Los Angeles partnership produced Song of Norway, with a book by our own Homer Curran and Milton Lazarus, and music adapted by Robert Wright and George Forrest from the music of Edvard Grieg. Song of Norway was choreographed by the influential George Balanchine and ran for 860 performances at Schubert's Imperial Theater on Broadway. In 1948, Curran co-wrote with Frederick Hazlitt Bedin the book from Magdalena, with music by Haida Villalobos and with lyrics by his previous collaborator Wright and Forrest. Magdalena was less successful way, running under 100 performances. Brooks Atkinson of the New York Times called it one of the most overpoweringly dull musical dramas of all time, and compared its slow plot to being hit over the head with a sledgehammer repeatedly all evening. Shortly thereafter, Curran left San Francisco for Southern California, where he opened a business that rented theatrical lighting. In the 50s, the theater was used for the interior and exterior scenes of a Broadway theater in the movie All About Eve. The original main floor interior lobby can be seen in this film. All of the theater scenes were filmed at the Curran with the exception of the dressing room interiors. In 1952, longtime impresario Louis Lorry was able to purchase the Curran for the sum of $800,000, the same amount that it cost to build. In 2015, Shorenstein Hayes left SHN and decided to focus her attention solely on the Karin. In 1977, the San Francisco Light Opera moved its operations to the Orpheum Theater, and by the end of that year, Carol Shorenstein Hayes and James M. Niederlander assumed operations of the Karin and launched their Best of Broadway series. The first production was John Reid and the National Tour of Shenandoah, and then followed by the West Coast premiere of Annie. In 1985, Shorenstein Hayes took control of the long-term lease on the Karin and later outright purchased the building in 2010. The Shorenstein Hayes Niederlander organization changed its name to SHN, and now Broadway San Francisco. In September 2015, the Karin closed its doors for an 18-month, multi-million-dollar renovation. The Karin was designed by Alfred Henry Jacobs. Jacobs was an American architect that was known for designing theaters, hotels, and religious buildings. Three of the buildings he designed are listed on the National Register of Historic Places. He studied at the University of California at Berkeley and the Massachusetts Institute of Technology. He was one of the few architects to study at the prestigious L'École des Beaux-Arts in Paris. In addition to the Karin, Jacobs also designed the California Theater that once stood at 4th and Market Streets. The Karin is an enframed pavilion building with end bays and adjoining wings. The ornamentation is a mix of Renaissance and Baroque style. The central pavilion is defined by three central arches that are embellished with massed keystones and swags. Each arch is filled with elaborate metal window framing. The facade is also adorned with a handsome metal marquee and capped by a copper mansard roof with finials. The interior of the Karin featured a rose and tan design, adorned with a crystal chandelier centered in a starburst in the ceiling. The starburst is centered on a great sun, surrounded by cornucopias with fruit pouring out, guarded by lions and angels. The lobby was adorned with artwork by Arthur Matthews, a celebrated artist who was a key figure in the California decorative style movement. The main lobby had a plaster grain ceiling that was hand-painted to look like wood that was reflected off a shiny marble floor. The lobby included two coat check rooms and two telephone booths in the mezzanine. And on each side of the windows, there were additional seating. Also on the mezzanine level was the loge section, filled with movable chairs and sectioned boxes. The Karin's two front curtains consisted of a decorative green fire curtain and a gold main. The Karin has hosted more pre-Broadway engagements than any other theater in San Francisco, including productions of Beautiful, the Carole King musical, Neil Simon's Biloxi Blues and Brighton Beach Memoirs, Fences, Kismet, Ring of Fire, White Christmas, and Wicked. Under the direction of 8-time Tony Award winner Carol Shorenstein Hayes, and almost a century after it welcomed its first Bay Area audiences, the Karin reopened in January 2017 with the groundbreaking musical Fun Home. And the Karin stands ready to welcome Bay Area audiences for another 100 years of entertainment. I hope that you enjoyed episode 2 of Ghost Lights. Visit ghost-lights.com to see photos of the Karin Theater and subscribe for upcoming episodes. Thank you for listening, and we look forward to exploring the history of another beautiful venue next time on Ghost Lights.